Brian, have you ever played the game 6 Degrees of Separation?
Yeah, the Kevin Bacon game.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Is Kevin Bacon here?
No, Kevin Bacon. All right.
Do you
no
have
Kevin
a surprise
Bacon.
Guest for us?
I wish Kevin it was Kevin Bacon. Bacon. We could get Footloose yeah. with Kevin Bacon, but no. Okay. So I'm gonna tell you a story, and then I'm gonna tell you why I tell the story. Okay. So I am one degree away from Dallas Jenkins.
Okay.
So I
and
went.
He's
to
not
high
here either.
No, we'll get there. He's okay. not here either. But I went to high school with Dallas's brother Chad.
Okay.
Dallas was about 2 years older than me. I transferred into late. Dallas had already graduated from the high school. And Chad, his younger brother, and I played baseball. And actually, Chad was better than me and right. beat me out for the position when we played baseball. So I'm 1 degree separated from Dallas Jenkins, the creator of The Chosen. And I tell you that story because our guest, Adam Drake, is a filmmaker, a director, and he is part of the show, The Chosen. Now, the crazy thing is, you guys grew up together, right?
Yeah, sort of. I mean... let's see, how old are you, Adam?
I just turned 40 yesterday.
Okay, so a couple years younger than me.
Okay.
And me and his brother were in the same class at a really small Christian school.
Mm.
Like, so small that me and Adam were probably in the same classroom. It's one of those schools where, like, second, third, and fourth are all in the same room. So we grew up in a little town in Middle Tennessee. We were all a part of this same Christian school.
Did you pick on him on the playground?
No, I don't really remember that.
Okay.
What I remember is
I remember it.
Yeah. I remember being very meek and gentle.
Yeah.
We were like mentoring.
Yeah.
The third graders.
And we got him on the show for reconciliation so you can apologize.
They had the most unbelievably cool house. Like that I'd ever been in. And basically like it had the trap doors and hidden rooms but that wasn't always their house, right? They were like building it. His dad and mom were building it for like I don't know how long they built that. Like how old you were when you moved in? How old were you when you moved in there?
I think maybe just before middle school or something. It took them like 5 or 6 years to build it. It took a while. We were living in a trailer on the property for many years. Yeah. Little tiny trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So if you don't know, Brian's from Sparta, Tennessee. It's the bustling metropolis of Sparta, as Adam Drake is. So I got to know, like, from Sparta, like, no disrespect to Sparta, you guys, but was it always going to be movies? Like, was it always film? Like, it doesn't seem like a Hollywood of Tennessee.
You know, it's close. There's a lot of Hollywood stars that come out of Sparta that you just don't know about. But it was not always movies for me. It was sports. I loved sport. I played baseball, basketball, and football through high school. But I loved basketball. And so basketball was my jam, what I loved. So I went to college. I went to Nashville. Well, at first I got a scholarship to play at a school in Kentucky. Then I transferred to Trevecca Nazarene University in Nashville. And played basketball for them. And it was in college that I stumbled upon acting. I did. It's totally, you know, back then it was one of those scam things, but this one happened to not be where you, I don't even remember, but you'd walk around in the mall.
Yeah.
And they'd have like you want to be a model, a talent actor, you know, look at and they'd have like an image and stuff, you know, totally a scam. Well, I did one of those and it happened to not be a scam. This
in
was
college.
The real
deal. You did this in college.
In college. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And so in college, I went and auditioned for this thing, ended up getting a bunch of agents and booked my first modeling gig. And then after that got on a couple music videos there in Nashville.
Wow.
And as soon as I got on my first set, like a film set on music, video, I was just in love. I was hooked. And it wasn't just falling in love with it, but he instantly felt a calling to it. And I was like, oh, this is, I'm not. Brian, you and I were talking earlier about missions, and it's I don't feel like I'm called over into Africa or to somewhere else. I was like, this is it. This is my mission field. This is where I'm supposed to be. These are the people that I'm supposed to be interacting with. These are the people that I'm supposed to be telling about Jesus. And like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And I just felt that calling so clearly on my life in college and just started jumped in head first, knowing nothing about the business, except I just started acting.
I feel like friends of Adam have just hit pause on the show and gone to YouTube to find these music videos that he's starring in. Yeah. Like, they're like, he's in a music, like, we have to find this. Like, Adam in the music video.
I want
to
Google these headshots from when he was in college.
I can show you the headshots.
That will be the thumbnail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going through the mall. Were you like, well, I got it. Like, were you, I'm the next star they're looking for. Were you wanting to be famous? Like, was it like a dare? Were you bored?
No, actually, it was my mom. My mom.
Of course, it was.
It was Cherie? My mother. Yep, Cherie. Yeah, exactly her. Right,
bro.
My mom. The only acting I'd done was through my church, drama, like play stuff, because I played sports, so I couldn't do drama at school. But I always liked it, and so my mom had saw it and was like, "You should check this out." And I was like, "I don't know. I just thought, why not?" Yeah. But no, I actually didn't have that desire to be like, oh, I want to be famous. But I thought, I enjoy acting. It would be a lot of fun to like do a commercial or a music video. I wasn't thinking, oh, I got to be a movie star. It was definitely I'd love to try this out. And it'd be really cool to be in a commercial or something. Having no idea how much I would love it.
What I want to ask is, you said when you got to the set, you recognized that it was purpose and calling.
Mm.
What was it about that moment that you go, this is where I feel alive? What connected in you that made it so evident?
Yeah, so it wasn't, you know, of course, I summarized it like it was an immediate. It was definitely gradual.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this, at the same time, this is like my junior year of college. I still don't have a major. I went to college to play basketball. My dad always said I majored in basketball, minored in women. And that was it. Like, I was there to just like... I was there to live it up, man. I didn't care about school. But junior year of college, I'm realizing that like basketball is not like the NBA is all I ever wanted to do. And I just, I'm too short and I'm too white and I'm not going to make it. And so I just got to start looking for other things. So it's kind of at that point in my life too, where I'm just going, I don't know what's next. And I have no idea what I want to do with my life. And there's no purpose. And like basketball is all I've ever known and loved. And so at the same time that then this acting thing kind of comes about and I get on, I'm like, wow, this is a lot of fun. I really enjoy this. I'm also like, Lord, what do you want for me? Like, what am I doing with my life?
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually, there was like, they have a missions month every month at Trevecca or every year at Trevecca. And they were talking a lot about missions like overseas and stuff like that. And I was like, is that what I'm supposed to do? And that's when it kind of started rolling over of me going, oh, like this, like my mission's not there, but it's here. I want to go to Hollywood and what has the biggest impact on our culture is movies and television.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, oh, this is it. This is where I'm supposed to be. This is where I can have influence and I can have impact. And, and just jumped in head first. And at that same time, just absolutely fell in love with it, you know?
Yeah.
So your walk with faith, like, was pretty just consistent, like, middle school, high, I mean, we went to a Christian school. Your family, like, and my family both, small town, faith-centric. Like, so by the time your junior year, stepping into that, you're very, like, listening to the voice of the Holy Spirit.
Hmm.
What do I want to do? Is that accurate?
I mean...
Your journey?
I feel like it took me my whole life to learn the voice of the Holy Spirit. Yes, I've been a good kid my whole life, like, inconsistent. Yeah. So, yeah, I was saved when I was real young. I had incredible parents that always taught me from a young age that it wasn't about church and it wasn't about religion and it was about relationship. So and they taught me that from a young age. So I was always pursuing that. And so, yeah, I feel like it was kind of just a gradual growth. Like as I got through high school and then I go to college and I'm like, and I'm learning more and deepening my faith. And then I also met my now wife, who I dated all through college, who also obviously really strengthened my faith too. She was a strong believer since she was young. And so we're growing together and like learning this. And then of course, getting married, you realize once you get married, you realize how selfish of a human being you are. And like, so that, I mean, that helps you grow in your faith. You're like, wow, I like do everything I do is for me. And then you have kids and then you go, wow, everything I do is just for me. I'm the most selfish human being I've ever met. Like kids really teach you that. So just kind of that gradual progression throughout my life of getting married and then having kids and going, wow, I really don't understand what it's like to be selfless and to be like Jesus until you kind of like progress in some of those things. So yes, I've been a believer my whole life, but yeah, it's been just a gradual progression. I never got into the party phase in high school or anything like that, or in college. Yeah.
So Adam, what moves you from college student modeling a couple of music videos, thinking Hollywood is the route? You were kind of in front of the camera to where now you're behind the camera. What's been the shift, or what's been sort of the transition to want to be the storyteller from that seat and not be the one in front of the camera?
Yeah, that, I mean, that happened pretty immediately too. So it was as soon as I was on set, it, like I said, it was like a mission. So it wasn't, as soon as I got in front of the camera, I was like, oh, I just want to act. It was as soon as I discovered it and kind of saw how it worked, I was like, oh no, I want to be here and I want to have impact. I want to make content that changes the world. I want to be, I want to be a part of this. So that was part of the process when I first stepped in. So then it was basically, as soon as I started acting, I was also then like, okay, I want to learn how to do this as well. And make content. So I just started pursuing that of not knowing anything about it, going, learning how to shoot, how to edit, how to bring stuff together, how to make this thing happen. I just started like trying to consume it all. It was kind of like, it was like basketball. Basketball was like all consuming for me. I loved it so much that I would just play all the time. So even when I wasn't at practice, I was practicing on my own. And so that passion just instantly kind of transferred over into this, where I was like, I just want to consume everything I know about what it is to make a movie or make television or to make content and learn how to do it, you know? Mm-hmm.
That feels like everybody else was almost trying to go viral. Like like a lot of that was happening at the turn of Facebook is coming.
Yeah, Vines.
Like Vines, social media, and you're looking at film when that was the turn when everybody was looking anywhere but film, I feel like. Am I reading that wrong? Is that around the time when everything else was going shorter content, go viral, use your phone, and you're going studying this bigger picture thing? Is that
a little bit? Yeah, it was like 2000. I mean, I graduated college in 2008, and basically was full time pursuing it in 2010.
Okay.
Or well, really 2008. I mean, as soon as I graduated, but 2010 was actually doing it. So, Vine was popular, and I think it was a little bit later. It was probably in 2014, 2015 or whatever. Okay. It felt like let's shorten everything and make it really quick. Definitely been through that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess this is more my selfish question, because I love a good movie. And I feel like every Friday night, my wife and I sit down and go, let's watch a good movie. But I don't know that we're making good movies anymore. Are movies coming back? I feel like Breadwinner came out, I think, this week with Nate Bargatze, and we talked about Solo Mio. We went and saw Solo Mio, and my wife loves a good rom-com, you know, like classic 1990s rom-com. Yeah. Are the theaters coming back? Are movies coming back? Or are we stuck with whatever Netflix gives us?
Yeah, that's I'm in the same boat. That's a hard question. It's so many times I'm like, let's see. Top Gun Maverick, when that came out 2 years ago, I was like, movies are back. Let's go. Yeah. You know, like, this is it.
F1. And so there's been the F1.
Yeah. And I felt like that way about F1 too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, movies are back. So I think that's a tough question of that. They haven't gone anywhere, but yes, we're unfortunately, I think Hollywood and a lot of studios work from fear. Work from a place of fear and a fear of success of the film because the box office is so unpredictable. Even if you make a great film, it could completely fail in the box office, right? So I think they operate from a place of like, well, let's just make something safe that is at least going to make its money back, or at least get enough so we can make the next one. You know, so it's really hard for the Christopher Nolans. Outside of like the Christopher Nolan, the Steven Spielberg, Christopher Nolan, you know, does all of his own. I don't know if you know his movies, but it's like, you know, he writes and directs his own thing that is not a remake or anything like that. He's earned his place to do whatever he wants, like a Steven Spielberg who's earned his place to do whatever he wants. So outside of those guys, everybody else is just making like a remake or because we've hit that era in the last 10 years of everything's a remake, right? And I think the reason for that, my opinion on that, is just because they're playing it safe and they're scared to make a an original film like a Nolan would do and go, I don't know, it could hit 300 million and do really well, or it might completely tank and we lose all our money on it. And I think that's where we're getting a hit every once in a while, right? We're getting like, oh man, that was a hit, that was great, and then it's like a bunch of not so great.
I feel like when I was growing up though, like high school, you went and saw all the movies.
Yeah.
Like even the bad ones.
Every
Friday. You went and watched. Like I can remember driving by the theater in Cookeville and having seen all the movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now they can come off the, and I haven't watched them.
I don't even know what's out of the theater.
Right.
Well, I mean, for me, I know my problem is that it seems like there's way more horror rated R scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, and the reason for that is they're successful. It's like, they're kind of like cult classics, you know, or, so it's when I want to do that too. I want to go see a movie every weekend. And so many times I look, there's only two movies that I'm willing to see.
Yeah.
And I'm even willing to see bad movies, but like, I don't want to see those kind of bad movies. Right. So for me, that's at least that's my experience. Yeah. It's like these, there's so many horror films and I'm like, man, there used to be like horror films only in October or every once in a while, not every weekend, you know?
Yeah. So Adam, you're talking about Hollywood not wanting to take big risks, right? They want to play it safe. And I feel like I don't want to insult Christian media, but I feel like Christian media has been vanilla for a long time, with the exception of maybe like the 70s when we had Rapture movies that were pretty startling. Like those were pretty freaky.
Yo.
But
talk about a horror flick, man.
Like they literally scared the hell out of us.
Yeah,
like that was their goal.
Yeah.
But do you think that's true also, what's been true of Christian media and Christian film especially, going, we can't take a big risk because, one, we don't have the money to put into it. Two, if we put any money into it, we got to get something back out of it.
Yeah, I mean, golly, man, making a movie is so like making just a movie, even a bad movie, is an accomplishment. They're hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's expensive.
Right.
It costs a lot of money, takes a lot of people, and it's a lot of work. And so it is hard to make a movie. So I'll give that to Christian media, and then yeah, the money is hard to come by to make something good, but the excuse the excuse I don't think we can hold on to is I mean, but at the end of the day, you got to have a good script, and there's so many times that I think Christian films, and I mean other this goes for secular too, is we go to make a movie, we're excited about making the movie, but the script still isn't there. The script is still terrible. So when you go to make it, the movie is definitely going to be bad. No matter how good the acting is or how good the production value is, if the script's not there, it's not good. And I've been a part of those too, where I've worked on some films where I'm like, man, the script is not done. Like it's not ready, but here we are filming. And it's like, I mean, how good can we make this when the script isn't fully there? Yeah. So, but yeah, I think what's cool is, man, when I first felt called into the business, into this, I was like, man, I remember I actually saw the movie. This is odd, but I saw the movie 300 and the movie 300, I watched it and I went, why can't we have Christian films like this? Like, why can't we have this, like a biblical story, a biblical worship, this just epic, good, like strong acting and like all the things. And just feel, I watched it in theaters. It felt so epic and huge. And I was like, why can't we do this with all the wars and things from the Bible? Like I want to, and remembering going, this is what I want to do. I want to make biblical content like at this caliber. Why is no one doing that? And that was 15 years ago. And here I am going. And at the time, that didn't exist. There was nothing on screen like that. And here I am 15 years later, and now it exists. Like, how cool is that? And I've been able to be a part of it. We're making stuff like House of David that is it feels very epic.
It is.
And has these huge battle scenes. And The Chosen, which has gone all over the world and changed lives. But to go, I mean, it just shows you how big God is, man. I'm like, I'm over here going, you know, 15 years ago, just praying, oh man, Lord, it'd be really cool. Like if we could make like cool biblical stuff. And I would like to be a part of that. This little boy from Sparta, who's doesn't know anything about making movies. And then 15 years later, I'm actually a part of a giant moving Christian film-based business of these films. I'm like, Dude, only God. Like, I have no, like, that's crazy. I tell people all the time, I'm like, the Lord moved the business and, like, created this business just for me. Like, yeah. Even though there's obviously hundreds of other, thousands of other people involved that are even involved with The Chosen. And The Chosen is even mine, right? I'm not the writer, creator, director of The Chosen. But to even be involved, I'm like, dude, the Lord, like, I feel like sometimes he did that just for me. Like, how cool is that? Like, it's just, it's mind-blowing to think about where we're at now compared to where we were when I first go, well, I want to make movies. You know,
I think too, one, there's some things that are trending right now, like faith, faith oriented content. But also, I know when The Chosen was first introduced to me, I came home from a missions trip and I was out of the country, and my wife just like sat me straight down and was like, yes, my wife actually, she sits me straight down, and I'm like jet lagged. She's like, start watching this. And I feel like I was watching and she was watching me the whole time. Like, she's sitting on the couch and she's like waiting for it to happen for me.
When's he going to cry? He's going to cry.
Right. Because, and I think I was two episodes in and I saw some like that Adam was involved in this. And I'm like two episodes in and I sent him a message and I was like, yo, this is amazing. I'm so proud. Like that you, like someone from our town, I'm so proud that you're doing this. Like, thank you. And he was like, what episode are you on? And I was like, three. He goes, it doesn't even start getting good till like five. And I was like, no way.
Listen, that's
like
not true.
Four. He's like, wait till you get to episode four. And I have had that mentality now, not just with The Chosen. I've had that mentality with Christian content.
Right.
Like, just wait until, wait until you get to episode four. Wait until you get to chapter six.
I tiptoed into The Chosen.
Okay.
Like, you know, because Christian media is not always good. Like, the Kendrick brothers have made a bunch of films, and Alex Kendrick is friends of Lee University.
He comes, for sure, yeah.
Comes and does several kind of talks for us, and he admitted, like, we do things cheesy on purpose because they're good Christian things, right? Like, we make cheesy jokes and dad jokes in the film and write that because that's part of it. So I kind of tiptoed into The Chosen. There's a Dallas Jenkins film my kids love, Hometown Legend, which they love. My kids wore that film out. It's a football film.
Okay.
So, but it's still kind of cheesy, but it's a great family film. So I kind of tiptoed into it, into episode one. I thought, oh, this is good, you know. And when we get to the scene in episode one, if you've not watched The Chosen, I'm spoiler alert, where Jesus looks at Mary.
But you're a little behind at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And calls her by name. Like, I was like, oh, I got chills. Like, it was so it wasn't just good writing. It was so well done. And I was like, well, I'm all in. I am all in on this, and if it gets bad, I'm all out. But right now, I'm all in. And from episode one, I was sold.
Yeah, that's most people's response is by the end of episode one, when he calls Mary, they're like, "Oh man, I'm hooked. I'm in for it." Yeah.
So when I get this, me and my wife, we run a nonprofit. We're pastoring, like we're doing these things. We don't come from a lot of money, and the money we do have, we're doing global things with it, but it was every time we're gonna pay this forward. It was pay it forward at the time. We're gonna give the $20 for this every like, and I would want to watch an episode again. And being like a denominational kid, I'm like, I already paid for it, and my wife would be like, no, you got to pay for it again. You got to give it again, babe. We're sewing in. But I do think there was this realization, Christians realized, whoa, I don't have to be a billionaire. I can put my money into these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we are a spending pool. And give us an angel. Give us something. And we'll spend money. And we want you to create things for us.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you hear it from Christian filmmakers all the time. Like, so, like I can only imagine too. Just came out not long ago from Kingdom Story Company, and like, there's tons of content being put out right now. And like, this is what the Christian filmmakers are like. If you want more content like this, then go support it, go watch it. Yeah. That's why I tell people all the time, like even if it's not your thing, you want more content like that, then spend your money there. Like, put your money on that, and you will, you know, then we can make more, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But it feels like even Hollywood's taking note of this. Like, the larger Hollywood is going, hey, there's this populace of people who don't want the horror film. They're tired of woke narratives or whatever that we've built in or woven in. They want something they can take their children to. They want a good story. And they've jumped into this faith-based or faith-adjacent creation, creating new content. Are we going to see more of that? And even on, we'll get to your podcast, Brozen, but the Wizard of Waverly Place, David, what was his name? You just had him David on your Henry. Show. Yeah. And he was talking about Hollywood is asking for these kind of scripts. Are we going to see more of that from the larger Hollywood kind of studios?
I mean, they're going to chase the success, right? So, yeah. Like I said, I think they work. I mean, again, this is just my personal thing. It's not like I know, but I think they work from kind of a fear-based thing. So if they start seeing all this Christian wholesome content being successful, then yeah, of course they're going to jump all over it. They've jumped all over The Chosen. And and Dallas has talked about, I'm not spoiling anything here, but that that he wants to create and is working on creating a biblical universe, and you know, that extends from The Chosen, and they're all over that. You know, The Chosen is currently with Amazon Prime. They're all over it. They love The Chosen and they want more, and so they're like, yes, bring it all. And it's not just Amazon Prime, you know, that's Netflix, it's all of them. I mean, at one point before we were like exclusive with Prime, we were on all the platforms. We were on Netflix and Prime and Hulu, you name them, we were on all of them. And so, yeah, I think very easily they'll chase the success of it. And of course they've tried a few times, right, too, right? So where, you know, I don't know, several years ago they made Noah, but it was very biblically inaccurate. And so I think they're figuring it out, right? Finding out that it's like, oh, if we're going to make biblical content, then we got to get on board with like these other guys, like Kingdom Story Company, The Chosen, and things like that, to go, oh, we need to make it accurate. if we're going to go after that audience.
Yeah. What's wild to me, though, is if you think historically, two of the biggest films in history, The Ten Commandments, right? And Ben-Hur, which is not biblical, but it's
saw Ben-Hur and then went and was like, where is he in the Bible?
Yeah.
Like, I thought this was a biblical character.
Yeah, like, so two of the biggest historical films were biblical or faith adjacent.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when did they not think we weren't an audience? Like, when did they go,
exactly,
like, those people don't want that anymore?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is a long time ago, it's like Christian media had it. We were making some really amazing content and we were at the top. And then there was like this whole middle area where it's like, we were nowhere to be found. And then now I think we're back on that uprise now with The Chosen has sparked so many things that it, like, I mean, I get a lot of calls even now. It feels like every month of like somebody's making another biblical series or a biblical movie or some type of Christian content that people are wanting to do. So I we're on this uprise of Christian films.
Do you think that there was this like period where Hollywood and film and all of this stuff was like the elephant graveyard of Lion King? Like, Christians,
don't
we don't
there.
Like, I'll be honest, I grew up holiness for a long time. And so like, we weren't even allowed to go to the movie theaters.
Right.
The first movie I ever saw at the theater was Flipper, and it was my uncle, and I thought I was doing something wrong. And I was like, bro, 12 or 13. The next movie I saw,
just shows we grew up in the same town, because I'm in the same boat, dude.
Yeah. The second movie I saw, which should have been the first, I'm so mad that the first one I saw was Flipper. The second movie I saw at the theaters was Twister. Which was an amazing like first theater experience, right?
Yeah.
But
way. I grew up we were Nazarene. I don't remember which church you went to.
It was a Church of God church just down the street. We all played basketball with you guys though at the gym, I think, on Wednesday nights.
So Nazarene and my parents, same thing. My parents were like, we don't go to the movies. I didn't go to my first movie theater until I was 10 or 12. Mm-hmm. And Mighty Ducks was the first thing I saw in theaters. I get to tell, it's so fun, dude. I get to tell people now, I'm like, dude, I wasn't even allowed to go to the movies. And now I make movies for a living.
My first film, and I felt like, again, like I was sinning. My mom let me go with my friend group to The Goonies.
You were sinning, bro.
I was.
You were
like,
sinning.
I was like, I had to go home and repent. Like, it was the same way. Like, we didn't do movies as Christians.
It's like we let the world just have this thing for a while.
Exactly. Yeah. We were like, we just gave it up. We just handed it over. We're like, it's sinful. It's wrong. We hit this area where it's like, that's like, we don't want to be involved in all of that. So we're going to hand it over and we let them take over.
Yeah. So we sit as consumers of The Chosen. We've watched every episode at least once, maybe twice.
Yeah, I don't know.
Tell us something, Adam, that from behind the scenes, what has been maybe your greatest joy of being on the set? What have you seen that like that we don't know as consumers?
I mean, the amount of there's so many, but the amount of like messages I get or people that know about it, like when Brian hit me up, you know, that was an everyday occurrence when The Chosen started taking off, like after COVID season two. I mean, it was almost every single day I'm getting messages from people I went to high school with from all over just going, oh my gosh, this show has changed my life. And not just like, oh, it's cool that you're involved. It's cool that you're doing the show. It's like, no, this show literally changed my life and my entire family's life. And that's just me as the assistant director on the show getting messages daily. Like the amount of messages that The Chosen gets in general, you know, that Dallas gets and that the show gets, is just like the impact that it's had on the world is just unbelievable. So to just see the impact that it's had from the beginning has been a wild ride of just going, oh my gosh, like where this thing has gone everywhere. And then, so now we do this. One of my favorite things too, is we do a Chosen Con, which is so like Comic-Con, there's a Chosen Con and we've done three now. And so a couple Chosen Cons ago, I got to get up there and speak and it's so cool. I was telling the audience that I could have done the latest Avengers film, whatever the biggest blockbuster hit has been, and not a single person would know my name, right? As the first assistant director. Nobody knows who first assistant directed the latest Avengers movie or F1 or you know what I mean? You don't know who the first AD is or for Top Gun Maverick or F1 or any of that. But yet everyone seems to know my name for the first AD of The Chosen. And I get so many messages saying, thank you for the sacrifice that you make of like leaving your family and being involved and like doing this. And it's had impact. I'm like, that's crazy. Cause I'm over here, you know, first jumping into the business going, I want to work with Tom Cruise on Top Gun. I want to do the big stuff. And like, you know, I want to do these biggest films and then to do The Chosen. And then, in a way, more people know who my name is than I ever would have been if I did the biggest movie in Hollywood, because the fan base is so different, right? Because it's changed people's lives. Yeah. So they seek me out because they just see me involved. And of course, The Chosen is different too with all the BTS stuff and we film everything. So everybody's like seen my face or knows my name. And so people just constantly going, thank you. Thank you for what you do. Like, it has changed my life. And so I'm like, man, I'll go the rest of my career and probably never do anything like this again. You know what I mean? And I'm good with that. Like I could go work on the next Top Gun with Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt or whoever is my famous person that I want to work with or the biggest movie that I want to do. And it'll never have more impact or be bigger than The Chosen for me. Right. Which is crazy. Like this is it, man. Like, you know,
I hear interviews with actors and people in the industry all the time that were like, yeah, I had a chance to do that movie, but I was already doing something, so I had to pass on this. And one, how did you decide to say yes to this? Was it easy, no-brainer? You were begging for work, and you're like, I don't have anything else. Yeah, sure, anything. How did that come? And how do you decide what to say yes to in general?
Yeah,
that's a great question. And what's funny is like they just released, I gave my testimony at a film conference and they just released a video like a couple weeks ago. And I answered this exact question. Or I was talking about this through my testimony. No, it was not an easy decision for The Chosen, because actually I'd been doing movies with this company that does two movies every year, sometimes three. So at this time I have three kids and I think the fourth is on the way. No, four kids and the fifth is on the way. And obviously this business is very lucrative, right? Or it's all over the place, right? It's feast or famine. Like I'm either working and making money, or when I'm not working, there's no money coming in. Mm-hmm. And my wife stays at home. So I was working with this company that was doing two movies every year guaranteed, and sometimes three. So I'm continually working with them, and they had just offered me the next film. It was just about to start. they asked about my availability at the same time that Dallas sends me the first four scripts of The Chosen. Mm. And again, it was only four scripts. It wasn't eight episodes. It was only four episodes because they only had funding for the first four. And it was like, hey, here's the first four episodes. We hope to turn this into a series. No idea if it'd be successful, but we're at least going to make these four. And I've been a part of a lot of those. I've been a part of a lot of pilots where we shoot the pilot and then nothing ever happens. Or shoot a couple episodes and then it never goes anywhere. So I've done that multiple times. Yeah. And so there was on the plate. And actually, I think the movies were paying, the movie company I've been working with was better pay too. And then Dallas offers The Chosen with four episodes. That's probably not continual. Most likely doesn't get picked up and continue. If they can't fund the whole first season, they're probably not going to be able to fund the rest. And I've got this guaranteed thing. So the obvious answer for me and my family is, well, I'll take the movies.
Yeah, and say thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord.
Exactly.
For this provision.
Yeah.
And again, now we'll give the caveat that Dallas sent the four scripts and I was blown away by the scripts. Like, I was like, oh my goodness, this is better than anything I've worked on. These scripts are really good.
Okay.
But I also went, like, when I first read it, I'm like, who's playing Jesus? Because this guy has to be legit. Like, this, I've never seen Jesus portrayed this way or well. So I'm also reading it going, this is really good. But I'm also going, who's your cast? Because this could be really bad too. Because the writing's incredible and I love it, but man, these guys have to pull it off.
Right.
And for like Mags and for Jesus. And I remember messaging Dallas going, who's your Jesus? Like, it was like first question I asked him. He goes, oh, it's a friend of mine. I'm like, oh, we're screwed. Like, this is going to be so bad. Because they were friends before we did The Chosen. And I was like, oh, this guy's going to be terrible. It's the director's friend. You know how many times I've heard that?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh gosh, this is going to be trash. But so yeah, that was my first response for sure.
Gosh.
But then
Jesus is holding the film back, man. This would have been a great film, but Jesus sucks.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And of course, little did I know, of course, when I go to The Chosen, like Jonathan Rumi plays Jesus, obviously, absolutely incredible. I was blown away. First time I saw him on screen, I was like, oh my gosh, this is your friend? Like, what? How is he this good? You know,
I have no friends like that.
Me
either. Sorry, Jeff.
Me either.
No friends like Jonathan.
I look nothing like Jesus.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm back to weighing the films. And this is where I say, like, that's the hardest thing, I think, in my Christian walk, too, is going, I have two good decisions in front of me.
Mm.
Well, either one is good, right? Yeah. And both provide for my family are both okay. But this one feels a little better because it's more stability. But then this is where I think it's so important for us as believers, as you talked about early on, Brian, as believers, we have to be hearing from the Lord and letting the Holy Spirit guide us. Because I can still make a good decision and providing and like I'm going to take the film and provide for my family. Well, what if God's not wanting me to worry about providing for my family in this season? What if he's going, no, Adam, I want to stretch you and I will provide for your family. Don't you believe I'll provide for your family, Adam?
Yeah.
Like, it is not, yes, it's my job to provide, but it's my job to rely on the Lord to provide for my family and not live in fear of me providing for my family myself, right? So anyways, these are all things I've been continuing to learn in my walk, but it's like, and this isn't the first time. This was, you know, eight, nine years ago now, that I was faced with a decision. I've been faced with that so many times since. But this was the big one that I get asked about a lot, right? Because look at what it turned into, of course. And it's like, man, that's why, I would have never been involved with The Chosen if I didn't stop, pause, and go, Lord, what do you want for me? What do you want for my life? It's not just going, well, I have two great decisions. This one's going to provide for better for my family. You know, I hear so many people say, well, and not that the Lord can't do this. I think he does this all the time. But I hear so many people say, like, well, Lord, close this door and open this door. Like, close this door if you don't want me there and open this door. And I don't think it's always closing open doors, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's like both doors were open. And I got to, you know what I mean? Like, there was, Dallas is like, I want you to come do this. This film's like, I want you to come do this. Both doors are wide open. There's nothing blocking either one. I'm like, Lord, I don't know where to go. And it was just, I just had this peace about jumping over to The Chosen. I had this, and it was really hard because I had to tell the production I've been working with for years no. And I'd worked with those guys a long time, and I knew, because a lot of times when you say no to somebody in this business, they're never going to call you back.
Right.
You're probably not going to work with them again, because they got to move on to the next guy, and the next guy's probably going to roll with them for a long time too, especially a company that's doing two movies a year.
Yeah.
And sure enough, that was the case. Like, once I turned them down, I didn't hear from them for a long time, for many years, which turned out fine, right? Because then now I got The Chosen for several years. But either way, I'm at the time, I'm going, this is a no. Like, this is, if I say no to this, I lose this probably forever. And if I say yes to this, it only provides for my family for the next couple months. And there's a good likelihood that it doesn't continue. And so anyways, to finally answer the question, sorry, is just like, yeah, I think this is something I've continued to learn even more in the last 8 years since making that decision, is just stopping, going, Lord, where do you want me? Where, what, in this season right now, where do you want me? What's best for my family? What's best for me? And not, and that so has to come from not a place of fear, but a place of trust and going, like, and not answering the questions of like, well, this one is good money and stuff. It's like, no, Lord, where do you want me? I'm really stuck. I don't know if you guys listen to or look at Jamie Winship stuff. Do you know any of Jamie Winship? You
He
ever heard of him?
just came across my feed this week, I think. I start
Oh,
seeing his
this
stuff.
guy's like changed my life in this stuff. He bases everything off of fear. Like, so, like fear-based decisions and where everything comes back to fear. And it's like that of going, well, I'm making a good decision because I'm providing for my family. And he's like, well, but do you not believe that the Lord can provide for your family? Because then you're working from fear that if you don't think the Lord can provide for your family, you have to do it. Like, why wouldn't you take that job that's $50,000 less a year if God's calling you to it? If God's calling you to it, then that's where you go. He'll provide the money. Like, otherwise, you're operating from a place of fear if you're going, well, I have to make 50,000 to provide for my family. Anyways, I listen to all his podcasts and he's incredible. And he's got his book called Living Fearless, which has just really opened up my eyes to this too. Of just going, man, like, man, I want to be where God wants me to be. And throughout my career over the last 15 years, like, those have been my favorite moments, right? Those have been the absolute best moments, is when I know without a shadow of a doubt, this is exactly where God's called me to be in this season, in this moment right now. And of course, that's been The Chosen too. So, yeah, very long answer to
No, it's a great
that. I
answer.
love
And I want
that.
to push on it just a little bit because our friends are probably sitting there listening going, yeah, five seasons in, six seasons on, now you're filming and it's got a seven season story arc. It's easy to sit there now and go, I made the right choice,
Right.
right? But sitting there with four scripts, let's say you only do the four scripts and it doesn't take off, is it still the right choice?
Oh, 100%. I mean, yeah, at the time, yes, And even when I did the first, I went and did The Chosen, just did those four episodes. Even when we finished, we didn't know if we were going to do four more. We didn't shoot the other four until a year later. And while they're raising funds. So even when I went and did those four, oh, I just knew it was the right decision then. It was such a beautiful experience. I'd never worked with Dallas before. Dallas and I got close with Dallas, loved him, loved working with him, all the crew, the cat, everything. It was just like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. It was definitely one of those moments of like, of this is incredible. Even if this doesn't go anywhere, this is exactly where I was supposed to be for sure.
Awesome.
When we sold everything and went into missions. I was pastoring a church and it was a great church. And the Sunday I was telling them that we're leaving, there's two services and the people love us and it's all this stuff. And my son is maybe seven at the time. And he's sitting on the front row and he's going to stay in the first service. And so I'm getting up there to speak. And I think I'm going to change my message a little. Because the reality is, we're selling everything and we have no income. And we're going to go raise money, but not enough just money just for us. We're going to raise money for projects and all this stuff. And we just believe that God's calling us to this. But I don't want to tell my kid that we're leaving and selling. Like, he knows we're moving, but that we have no income. But I want the church to see, one, that I'm not leaving them for something better. I didn't want them to think, oh, Brian got a better opportunity that's better than this local church, because I love the local church, but I felt pulled and called to do this. But my son's sitting there and I'm like, no, I'm not, I don't want him to know I don't have a promise for tomorrow. I don't want him to know that I'm not sure where our provision's coming from. And the Holy Spirit just checked me so specifically, saying, do you want him to think that you were a good father? Or do you want him to think that I was a good father? Do you want him to think that you were a good provider? Or do you want him to think that I was a good provider? And literally, it has been, as the Lord has provided, whether it's for digging a well, whether it's been for our family, like all the things, we always try to leave everything on the counter. If somebody writes a $10,000 check for a whale, I try to leave it on the counter. I want him to see it. Mm-hmm. I want him to know that it wasn't us. And when we're saying yes to things, I usually think we're trying to say yes to outcomes instead of opportunities. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to look through the lens of what is the outcome of this, right, instead of just saying, what is the base opportunity? Where do I feel the Holy Spirit stirring for my input, not for just my blessing? If I was an ingredient, where would the Holy Spirit want to put me?
Right.
And so, yeah, I could do this. It's two good decisions. But that fear is a reality that we have to wrestle with.
Yeah.
That's good, man.
We teach decision-making to our kids. We have five. And to the college students we've worked with.
Yeah.
As two steps. Gather as much information as possible.
Okay.
Like, get everything you need to know about the decision. And then the second step is, in light of God's leading, what is the right choice? And 90% of the time, I'll say 90, but this, I'm going to make up a number, right? Statistics are all made up. it's typically the illogical choice. The information, yes, says this is the right thing.
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit goes, this is the faith-filled choice.
Yeah.
And I think you got to have both. I think you got to get the information so you know, because sometimes it is the logical choice. Sometimes it is the two films over the four scripts. But a lot of times God goes, no, this is where you got to go, in light of even when the information tells you differently.
Yeah. Do you guys tend towards being more attracted to the risky thing?
I wish.
I do. I
know you do.
If I have two things and one is more like, feels like a greater risk, I tend to like, you know, I feel like I live with a hold my beer mentality. Like,
to the guy that doesn't drink beer.
Yeah, I don't drink, but
hold my sweet tea.
Yeah, but I feel like there's this, it's a risk, but it's not just, it's a risk, like, I want to do things that are irresponsible.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, the scripts, this is a beautiful script. I've never read a script, like what he's talking about, but I have looked at my life and thought, yo, these four scripts right here,
I could,
that's a beautiful script. I don't know how it's going to work, but this guy's an alcoholic and he's a mess and he wants to go to coffee every Thursday. Well, something about that script feels like it could be something.
So, full transparency on my side.
That's good.
I am risk adverse. So I partner with people like you who are not.
Smart. That's smart.
Like, I
just stretch you.
Like, yeah. So, I mean, I know I have to be in community. So I get around community who are going, let's go take the adventure. And then I'm like, cool, I'll go with you.
Yeah. Where do you fall, Adam?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. As you were saying, I think, for sure, before kids, definitely the risk side. And then I feel like as I've gotten older, wife and kids, I'm like factoring those factors in. And so I'm like, you know, chill out a little bit. But before it was like, oh, I'm definitely taking the risk. I don't know. I'd say I'm probably somewhere in the middle, but it was definitely heavy risk side. And then now with kids, I'm like, I'm trying to factor that in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As the chosen has taken off and that you are one getting known for that, is there another target that's like 10 years out that you're starting to feel? You saw 300 and you're like, oh, I want to do that. And now you're doing that. Is there another story that you're wanting to tell? Is there another thing that you're starting to, are you seeing an evolution of another horizon that you're like, oh, I want to go over there?
Yeah. What's really cool is, in my faith journey too, is, I've always been an achiever, right? I won, like basketball, man. It's all I did. I was determined to be the best. So the same thing transferred over here into film. Once I got in, I was like, well, I got to be Spielberg. I got to be the next guy. And the Lord's really brought me to a humble place of like, of just being present and being where I am. Yeah. So as the first assistant director of The Chosen, so much of what I do is serving somebody else's vision, right? I'm serving Dallas for his vision, to help bring his vision across. I'm serving other people. And the Lord's brought me to a place where, like, I'm good with that. Like, to where, like, Lord, if you want me to step to that next level, to be able to make and write and direct my own film and my own project that I'm super excited about, Lord, then yes, I'll jump all over if that's where you want me. But if you want me to continue to serve and be the first AD for every Christian project, biblical project, whatever that comes across the table, then I'm good with that too. And so since As the Chosen is closing, there has been a lot of opportunities, lots of people that are reaching out to me that want to do the next thing to where I could step up and produce or direct my own thing. So there is tons of opportunities that the Lord is providing. And so I'm just very much in this place of just nonstop taking it to the Lord and praying, going, Lord, yes, personally, I want to direct my own thing and I want to make my own movie next year, like, and do my thing. But I'm also like, Lord, if you want me to just continue to first AD for the next 20 years of my life, and then I'm good with that too. And so I'm really in this great place of like just constantly everything that's coming across my table of like what's next and what I'm doing, of just going, Lord, I'm good with all this. You tell me which one you want me to do. I will step into whichever. I will step into whichever one you have for me, and I will step into it with, like, not just because, I'm going to step into it with like, oh, this is where you want me and I'm excited about it. Even if that is doing the same thing I've been doing, or if that's stepping and doing something that I'm very excited about too. Either way, I'm going to step in with the same excitement because I know the Lord's calling to me. So I'm just, it's been really awesome of like going, I don't know what's next. And I honestly am excited about it. I have no idea what's next and I'm very excited about it.
Adam, has there been a no that was hard to give? Let's say maybe like we talked about F1 or Top Gun Maverick, has there been somebody that's called and on the surface you go, gosh, this would be amazing. Not necessarily from a status standpoint, but just from an art standpoint. And you go, but the Lord was like, no, we can't do that. Mm. Has there been something that was like you like, this would be fun, but the Lord's like, we can't do that right now, or we can't do that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one specifically I felt like the Lord said no on. But there's been a lot where I've just had to say no because I was unavailable or literally could not do it.
Yeah.
That I was so excited about just recently. Just recently, there's been a couple that I really wanted to be a part of, but I'm on The Chosen. So it's like an automatic no, right?
Right.
Of unavailability. So those are hard. I can't think of a specific one right now where it was like, because it's been a minute. You know, since The Chosen has been so consistent for the last 8 years, it's been a while since it's just been like, no, you're not, you know, going there. But yeah, there's definitely been plenty of projects that I've said no to that I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
I love this thing that I feel like you're giving, where fear's not allowed to be a factor,
right,
in my decision making as far as, my projects, my pursuit, all of those things. But also, I refuse to let fear to be a part of it. But I demand contentment to be a part of it. Like, I will operate from a place of contentment.
Right.
Whether I'm producer, assistant director, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I refuse to let fear be a part of it. And I'm demanding to come with a spirit of contentment before I ever decide.
Well, I think what's interesting, I just want to tag on to that, Adam, I'll let you speak, is that we started the conversation about Hollywood being fear-based. They're making movies out of fear. Then Adam's like, hey, I'm not going to let fear dictate my choices.
Yeah.
So there's almost like this thread through the whole conversation that I'm so glad you brought it to our attention. So, yeah, how are you living, obviously, in a faith-filled life and this contentment in your choices?
Yeah, well, I'll bring it back. You guys need to check out Jamie Winship. To his book called Living Fearless.
We can get him on.
You should. I mean, listen to his podcast. This guy's unbelievable. He'll blow your mind. But he's all about identity. So
yeah.
So he's talking about and your identity, who you are. And so doing his book, I've had an identity of like, right. Like, I'm a father and I'm a husband and a filmmaker. And I've always done a good job of keeping those things in order, right? Like God, and then my wife, and then my kids, and then my job. Like, I've done a good job of keeping that order, that I know a lot of men can get that out of order. But, and I knew that my identity was not caught up in my work. But something I discovered through doing this book with Jamie Winship is that I discovered, but my identity was found as a father. So I was putting me being a father at the top of that list instead mm-hmm. of being a son first, which mm-hmm. is a very different result when you realize that you're a son first before you're a father. And so through this learning my identity and that I'm a son of God, when I'm operating in my identity of truly who I am, who God's called me to be, then it doesn't matter where I am. It doesn't matter if I'm a first assistant director, producer, director, or if I get, you know, completely thrown out of the business and I'm in Africa yeah. with you, Brian. Like, that's it doesn't good. Matter. I am walking in my true identity in Christ. Mm-hmm. So it does not matter where you put me. I'm going to thrive, right? Because I'm exactly, because if I'm walking in my identity with the Lord, then I'm exactly where God's called me to be, wherever that is.
Yeah. I say this thing to my son, and I don't remember where I kind of heard some form of it, but I started when he was young. Mm-hmm. I'll ask him, I'll say, Memphis, who are you?
Yeah.
And he'll say, your son. And I'll say, what will ever change that? And he says, nothing. Mm-hmm. And I say, and what are we? And he says, family. And so what does that make us? And he says, rich. And there have been some moments where it was tense. Mm-hmm. He knew I was disappointed in a behavior, or there was things, or as a small child, there was discipline involved.
Right.
And I said, but now, Memphis, who are you? Your son. Okay. He could graduate from Yale. It doesn't matter. He could be a truck driver. It doesn't matter. I think I have projected that on him because personally I want that so much.
Mm.
Like I yeah. want so yeah. much to know that. And I do believe it is a struggle for me to, I have to constantly circle that mountain to yeah. say, because mm-hmm. you can't feed enough orphans to fill that void. I right. promise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. And I have like walked down that trail a little bit at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it matters what industry you're in. Film, missions, ministry, right. author. Yeah. Work, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And it is so easy to be pulled.
Well, the doing can never be enough. I mean, yeah. I think in the moment, you're exhilarated maybe. We're both communicators and preachers. Like, in the yeah. moment, you're like, this was awesome. And you step down from the stage, and it's gone. Like, you can't live off of that momentum. I would assume it's the same with filmmaking. Like, you rapid chosen, and you're like, this was awesome, but you can't live in the doing. Like, the doing is great. You got to also the being.
Yeah, that's something I've been learning a lot too, man. It's like the Lord, like, just calling you to be. Like, just be. And it's like sometimes as an achiever, if somebody that would like wants, I want to climb the ladder. I want to do the next thing. I want to accomplish mm-hmm. this. It's like, no, I'm just asking you to be, Adam. I'm just asking you to be. And it's like, oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
Talking about David Henry too. I think about him. We're talking about, he was telling us his testimony. We had him on the podcast, and at 21, he had everything. I mean, he had the celebrity girlfriend. He was dating the hottest model in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. He literally had millions of dollars. He had whatever he wanted because he was so successful, and he got there and he goes, this isn't it. There's still a giant hole in my heart. What am I missing? And of course, he found out he was missing the Lord and came to find Jesus. And now he's like this amazing dude. But I'm like, how cool is that to actually know somebody who literally had it all,
right?
The successes of America. He had all of it, whatever he wanted. And it wasn't enough.
Yeah. Your podcast is called The Bros In. And so I'm going, I know enough about movie making, TV making, that it's like not a normal 8 to 5. Like, you're like 15, 16 hour days. You're at 3 a.m. filming. So I can't imagine you're just on set bored and go, let's make a podcast. So what birthed the Bros In podcast?
Yeah. So the Bros In, it comes from The Chosen and all of us brothers, five of us that met on The Chosen. One of the guys I knew before Chosen, but we all became really close friends on The Chosen. So that's why I called it The Bros In, because we've been working together, for the last 8 years, basically, and have been through the trenches together because of The Chosen's kind of done it all, right? We started a real small budget. Now we have a big budget, and we've done everything you can imagine. So, I mean, we would come at the end of a day, you know, a 14-hour day, and we just finished 14-hour day and we got to be back on set in 8 hours. And we'd sit and talk for 2 hours because we'd have to like recap the day of just going, dude, can you believe this and what happened, blah, blah, blah. And so we've done that for years. And we always said we should do a podcast because we have the most insane stories. There's so much that happens in a day and we're not recording it in any way. Or like we just at the end of the day talk about it and go, like, how crazy was this? And I'm like, we need to document this somehow. So for years we talked about doing it. But obviously, as you guys know, I'm sure you know, a podcast is time consuming. And so I never had the time to do it. And then the Lord totally worked it out to where when we decided to record, I was also part-time. I just started part-time teaching at Trevecca, teaching film at Trevecca Nazarene University. And at the same time, they were like, well, we'd like to sponsor your show and we can help. And so then I got students to edit it. So I basically could be completely of just like record and then just oversee it and not have to do any of the groundwork, which, so at the same time that we recorded the first episode, kind of all that came together and was like, oh my goodness, we have a podcast because it can actually do it. So that's how it all started. And then we just went, and it's the five bros. We've all been friends for many years, and there's just, and we're friends outside of set too. Like, we obviously know each other's family. We've spent a lot of time together. We've talked about faith and we talk about hard work. Like, so we've just been through it all. Right. And so we have so much to talk about, because we haven't just worked on The Chosen together either. A lot of times some of us will team up and we've worked on a different movie or a show. And so our bread and butter is set stories. We like to tell crazy, fun, silly, or even impactful, like life-changing stories that happened on set. But then obviously we get outside of that, talk outside of set too, and talk about faith and all that, because all the guys are believers, and so it's a good time.
Okay, so I have a couple questions in that vein.
Okay.
Of the people you're working with. Now, I happen to be a huge fan of Promised Land that you're also involved with, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what your role in Promised Land is, though. Are you the first AD for that as well? Is that a different role?
So I just did the pilot.
Okay.
And I was a producer and a first AD. So I helped it all come together basically, or helped it. So because the guy who wrote and directed it has worked for me for the last 10 years.
Okay.
So I'm the first AD. There's the second AD, and then there's the second or the third.
Right.
The second or the third is Mitch Hudson, who is the writer director of Promised Land.
Okay.
So he's worked, and usually on a film set, the first AD runs the set.
Yep.
The second is working on the next day and like base camp. And so they're not on set as much because they're working ahead. Then the second is the right hand man to the first AD. So Mitch has been my guy for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I hired him for everything I've done. So The Chosen, outside of Chosen, we did some Kendrick movies together. We did Overcomer. We did Monster Summer, the Mel Gibson movie. Like, he's been my guy for many years. And I remember when I first met him, when he first started working for me, he had sent me one of his scripts because he writes. And I was like, bro, like, this dude's crazy talented.
Yeah.
Like, you're only going to be – I remember telling him, like, you're only going to be an AD for a time because, dude, you're crazy talented. And then he had showed me his first film that he made out of college. He made his senior project in college, which, you know, anytime somebody's made a short film or a feature in college, it's not going to be good, right? And their first film. But he showed me his senior project that he made at college. And – again, the acting's not great and the production design, all this is not great, but the story and the elements are there. I remember watching going, oh, no, you're good. Like,
yeah,
well, and so anyways, but there's lots of people in the business like that are crazy talented writer directors that you'll never see.
Yeah.
And so my buddy Mitch had been doing, you know, he's always outside of when he's working with me, he's writing his own stuff, developing his own stuff.
Yeah.
And then, basically somebody else had written the idea of Promised Land. Another friend producer of ours brought it to Mitch and said, would you rewrite this? And he rewrote it and it was incredible. And they got the funding and basically got the pilot to get going. And Mitch was like, can you do this? And so actually, I think season five of The Chosen. Basically we went to New Mexico, to go and only spent, I think, 5 or 6 days to shoot the pilot. And he took basically all The Chosen crew. So me and a bunch of others were like, just cause Mitch has been working with us for the last several years, basically went out there for free or almost nothing and go, we'll help you make your pilot. But like I said, I've done a lot of pilots that never go anywhere.
Yeah.
We all just went out there and go, like, we all love Mitch because he's been working on The Chosen for years. And Mitch is the most likable, loving human being you'll ever meet. And we're like, let's go help you make this project. And we go help make the pilot. and they put the pilot online. It's crazy successful and blows up online.
Yeah,
and goes viral. So then he gets the funding for season one, and now he's doing season. And then there he went. And so
yeah,
so he actually is still ADing for me. He's still my second right now on season seven of The Chosen because he wants to finish it out.
Yeah.
So he'll finish season seven of The Chosen again, and then he'll never work for me again. I'll be working for him because now he's going to be and going to continue to be a very successful writer, director who's crazy talented. So it's cool, man. It's really cool to see because there's so many people I know like that, right? That are talented writer directors that'll never make it.
Right.
And to already see Mitch, who said actually when we first started The Chosen, like midway through The Chosen, he said, once The Chosen's over, I'm never going to AD again. I want to pursue writing, directing full time, no matter what. So he was going to do it no matter what. And it's really cool to go, dude, now we're finishing The Chosen and he's already good. He's already successful and already got a television show that's successful. That's really good. So I'm so happy for him. And yeah, it's really cool to see like one of your closest friends in the business, just career take off. Like that's, I can't wait.
What do you think, Adam, is the difference? We've talked to, a couple weeks ago, we talked to Abigail Joy. She's a young recording artist. We know some other young recording artists who are ridiculously talented.
Yeah.
We have people in our purview that are ridiculously talented.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That haven't made it yet or haven't found success or whatever it is. What do you think the difference is between incredibly talented and incredibly talented and the thing takes off or it gets discovered or it goes, I don't love the word viral, but they find an audience. Maybe that's a better way.
Yeah.
What is there a tipping point somewhere in there?
Gosh, man, I don't know. Yeah, like only God. Like I don't know. Like because like even the chosen, like there were so many chances for it not to be successful and not to blow up, and for it to take off and do what it did. Like if COVID wouldn't happen, I don't know that Chosen would be as successful as it is today. Like and you know, for the timing of that and crazy. So I don't know. That's, I don't know how to answer that question. There is so many talented people out there that will never be discovered or we won't ever see their stuff, you know?
Yeah.
There's a podcast, that Tom Segura, the comedian, does with Bert. I can't remember his last name, but
neither one.
Yeah. So the two guys, but there's an interview where Bert is talking to a guy and they're talking to him about his success. And he goes, I never want to hear about all your hard work. Everybody works hard.
Right.
Tell me about your luck.
Right.
Because there is luck in this. And as a communicator, as somebody who preaches, I always listen to comedians. Almost never listen to other preachers to learn how to preach because I never felt like I had that rhythm.
Yeah.
To that preacher rhythm. But I felt like comedians could sit in a crowd or they could lead a crowd on a journey. And it didn't matter if the audience was white, black, poor, whether it was in this country or another country, Democrat, Republican, it didn't matter. And they could literally talk about anything. A comedian could talk about things almost a preacher could never talk about. And I was like, how do they do that?
Right.
And he always said, tell me about your luck. And I do think there is something about COVID happened and The Chosen happened and all of these things orchestrated together for that. Dallas is friends with that dude to play Jesus.
I mean, it's not like this was Dallas's first project.
No.
Oh, no. He'd been a director for 20 years, but nobody ever heard his name.
There's a film he did, The Life of Somebody. I watched it on Netflix.
Pi?
No.
I'm sorry.
It's a classic, like, you know, failure to success kind of story or whatever. And he like claims it's like he thought it was going to be the thing that launched him.
Yeah.
And it was it was like not picked up at all. And it wasn't very good. Like we watched it as like mid, like right.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I think there is this like, I don't know.
Yeah. I think, what's crazy about The Chosen is the success came out of Dallas's testimony too. Like if you listen to his testimony, he'll tell you he was a pretty arrogant filmmaker. Like he's a Christian but he's like, I'm a good director. I know what I'm doing and I'm making great stuff, whether you like it or not, you know? And then it's like, and then he made this Resurrection of Gavin Stone.
That's what
which was like, he had a big actor. He had a huge studio involved. It had all the projections to be very successful and it completely tanked. And honestly, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a good movie, but it just didn't perform well. And out of that, I mean, he was like very humble of going, I'll never make a movie again. Lord, he got to that place where he's like, Lord, I'll just do whatever you call me to do. Like, okay, I'm done. If you want me done making movies and I'm not a director and you are calling me something else, then I'll do it.
Yeah.
And then out of that humbleness of him giving everything to the Lord and going, okay, it's up to you, God. I'm done. Like, I'm done trying to do it myself. Boom. So The Chosen. it literally came out of his testimony. So yeah.
Okay. So I trust Adam. Not because just like, because I know where he came from.
Yeah.
There's an element of our root systems so I have this trust. I think it's because I feel like somebody from Sparta, if they're lying, I'll be able to tell. Like, from the same hometown, I'll be able to tell. So I have
from the same water fountain.
Right.
Everybody talks. It's like, if I'm telling a lie, then you're going to know right away.
Yeah. I feel like his mom will message me and be
exactly.
Brian, he did not do, he is telling, he told me at Thanksgiving, he told me blah, 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 blah. So I feel like I'll be able to tell. So I have these like random like questions or like wonderings when it comes to the people you work with. Now, for the people who are listening that don't connect the dots between the character and the person, I think you should say who they are and who they play, right?
Okay. Sure.
Because people might not know. Because I'm pretty sure, like, my wife, I think, thinks that the Apostle Peter, that is the Apostle Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that she connects.
Like, he came back from heaven in a body.
He came back. Yeah. You know, sure. He was one of the two prophets that was going to come back at the end times of Revelation, and he just came back as an actor.
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, he actually is the only one that's from Israel. He's he actually is the only one that doesn't think the accent is Peter.
Okay.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay. There you go. So, you know, she's close. She's close.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's not. Gosh, I hate to. Hopefully she won't get this deep into the episode.
She's
not wrong that many times. I just, or I'm wrong enough times to make it obviously that she's right. She, okay, so like of the cast, of the people that you're working with, that kind of stuff, who is the most similar to their character?
Oh, gosh. The first one that comes to mind is Matthew Parse, who plays Matthew.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, I mean, he's definitely not on the spectrum, but he is very much like a numbers guy.
Really?
Very meticulous and like, I mean, that's the first one that comes to my mind. But honestly, I think of all of them, Austin, who plays Nathaniel, very much like Nathaniel.
Okay.
He's very cut and dry humor. Like, I mean, and Noah, who plays Andrew, man, they're all, honestly, a lot of them are very close to, like, and Chahar, who plays Peter, very much. Very similar to that as well. Yes.
Is that something you do in casting? Like when you're involved in projects, do you try to cast? Is that something that's thought about or it just happened that way?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think in a casting process, there's no way you can know their personality.
Right. Like
you try to get to know them, but it's a very short amount of time that you're going to know this person. No, I mean, you're really trying to cast the person that has the right look and then that just is a solid actor.
Yeah, okay.
But I think that what comes across usually, and at least in my opinion, really good acting in a really good actor is your own personality comes out in that, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that Peter is not exactly how Dallas thought it should be played probably originally, or even Matthew. Sure, it's very similar to what Dallas probably picked at the beginning, but I'm sure as they got Parris, who plays Matthew, they're developing that character together, right, as director and actor.
Yeah.
So Parris is bringing his own thing of going, well, here's what I think and here's how I feel. And then Dallas is going, yeah, I like that or I don't like that. And kind of navigating it. As they navigate that together, it just kind of naturally turns into some of his real personality, I think, is in there because then it's real.
Yeah.
And again, that's just my opinion on it. That's not factual, but I think that's kind of usually what happens.
Of the cast, okay, who is...
Oh, you're getting fired.
No, who is like naturally the most... like hilarious? Who's the funniest just naturally when the camera's not rolling that's just has that like just makes everybody laugh?
We have a lot of those.
Really?
My first response is honestly Jonathan. Jesus.
Yeah
he's a funny dude. He is the most like fun and just like outgoing and silly and always has something is Noah, who plays Andrew. He's just like he was a professional video gamer. If that kind of just speaks into his personality a little bit. He's just like a fun, like, dude.
Yeah.
Like, But honestly, man, so they're all our disciples are honestly a lot of fun. So I've these last couple of weeks, it's been just the disciples every day on set for the last 2 weeks while I've been filming. And it's just like, it's just always a good time. They've all become so close. This is the last season, 8 years together. Like, they're just always having a good
time. Who's the most likely to need to go take a nap?
Oh, that'd be our Philip, Reza, who plays Philip. Yeah. He naps on set consistently.
Okay. The most likely to need a snack.
Yeah, craft services hates this guy.
Right? Who's the most likely to like, oh, yo, wait a minute.
That's Matthew.
Take three. Hold on. Get him a snack, man. Somebody make him a sandwich.
That's Matthew.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who is the most like off to themselves? Because different people have different processes for acting and stuff like that. Who's the most likely to just need, you got to give them space?
Yeah, that'd be Philip as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
He likes to be by himself.
Okay. Who would win at a game of Texas Hold'em? Poker. Like, who's at like cards? Who would win?
I feel like this is maybe who has already won.
Is this just cast?
Well, I mean, no. Feel free to answer however you want.
Okay, I'll say Dallas Jenkins.
Really?
He actually used to do it professionally. Yeah, like he says that the way he got his kids through college was playing Texas Hold'em online. That's how he paid for it.
Awesome.
He's amazing. Like incredibly good at Texas Hold'em. Yeah.
Okay. That's amazing. Now this is the weeds I was trying to get in.
Yeah, this is where you wanted to get.
We're breaking news now. Breaking news.
Yeah. Okay, you have to recast Jesus with like a celebrity.
Oh boy!
Who would you recast him?
I mean, are you allowed to go Jim Caviezel since he's already?
It's your call. Like, yeah.
Okay.
Who would you recast?
I want to go somewhere new.
Who would you recast Jesus?
I'm thinking Tom Cruise, but
yeah, I'm kidding. I would be really interested. Six. What does he bring to that character?
Yeah. Dude, I really would like to be like, what if you did a total. Like a total white dude, like a Tom Cruise, a Brad Pitt. What would that look like? Could they pull that off? Because they don't really have the look. So they'd really have to bring it.
Who was it that played The Last Samurai? And it was like...
That was Tom Cruise.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what I'm saying?
So I believed it. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, like, he does his own stunts. So the crucifixion scene would probably be, he'd be down for it.
But how are we going to put a motorcycle in The Chosen if it's Tom Cruise?
He's going to ride the and, donkey gets wild.
And he obviously has to do a running scene, so I don't know where we're going to put that in.
So in the story that Tom Cruise films, like, he actually does throw himself from the Temple Mount, like when the devil's tempting him.
Temptation scene.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise is different for that. Yeah.
Why don't you toss yourself and let the angels catch you? He's like, I don't need angels. I'll just do it. And he leaps with no angels.
Yeah, we'd shoot this whole dream sequence of just a full-on action film with Tom Cruise. Yeah.
That sounds fun.
And then come back to reality and be like, oh, he didn't jump. Okay.
Yeah.
Just what ifs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So Tom Cruise, I like that as a recast. Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting with the Scientology beliefs. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not even for a minute connect that. Okay.
I didn't either. I didn't even think about that either.
What storylines in scripture or what things that if you could insert this, you would have love to like pull at that thread. Mm-hmm. Like I wish we could have done an episode on Blind Bartimaeus, or I wish we could have done are there some storylines that obviously that you're
I've actually never thought about that. That's a great question. But the first one that comes to my mind is Zacchaeus. I think that would have been a lot of fun. Zacchaeus is always a really cool story.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bible. Like I think that would have been fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad.
Yeah. Off camera, when before me and Jeff were hanging out, I told him I'm gonna ask him like which characters annoy him the most, like which cast members.
And I was like, "Don't get him fired."
And he was like, "Don't get him fired." And I was like, "Nah, we'll stick to the safe things, right? We'll keep it funny and interesting, because the people who like annoy him probably know, like the people who are like you know,
there's probably been an episode of The Bros, and we could point him to let him know.
Yeah, exactly. Just check out The Bros, and
exactly.
Find out all That's the details. So fun.
Oh, I love it.
So,
yeah.
Well, Adam, we have appreciated your time. We want to honor your time as well. We got a couple final questions that we ask every guest that comes on. So, Brian, if you want to start.
Yeah. People that are listening and just don't have the courage to try the thing to risk, whether it's to write the book or to do the podcast or to go in the mall for the modeling opportunity. because I do think that we're trying to encourage people to just do good in the world. Just do it. How would you encourage people to just go for it?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what our baseline this whole time is, no fear. Like, you gotta release that fear, whatever it is. Like, what is holding you back from writing that book?
Yeah.
Like, and then asking the Lord, what is it? Like, why am I not writing the book? Why am I not doing the podcast? Why am I not jumping into the film business? What are you scared of? What are you afraid of?
Yeah.
And ask and find out what that is. What is the exact fear? And then you'll probably find out, because our Lord and Savior does not work from fear, right? Yeah. You'll probably find out from the Lord that, like, oh, I can give this fear to him. This is his to have, not mine. Yeah. And then once you give him that fear, then you're stepping into, oh, this is exactly what God has called me to do. He has called me to write this book. It doesn't matter if it's successful in the world standards. He has called me to do this podcast. It doesn't matter if it's successful in the world standards and I get 2 viewers. It does not matter if 3 people are watching your book, reading your book or watching your podcast. If the Lord has called you to do it, those 3 people, it will have impact and will change your lives because God is asking you to do that, right? So yeah, let the fear go and do exactly what God has called you to do and listen to his voice, and it will be successful. Whether the world says it's successful or not, it will be. You know what I mean?
I love that.
I love it too. And we hear the couple of nobodies. We see nobodies as a good thing. A lot of the times the world doesn't see them as a good thing, but who is a nobody in your life that you would love the world to know about?
Man, there's so many. The first one I think about is my wife. I do all the podcasts. I've got the Brozen. I'm on the Chosen. I'm like, I'm in front of the camera a lot, and I've spoken at conferences and things like that. My wife doesn't do any of that. And yet she's way better spoken than me. She's way more wise than me, smarter than me. I'm like, everything you get from me, I just learned from my wife. Yeah. So everything you're like, man, Adam said that. That was genius. Well, it probably came from my wife. It's like, wow, he really had a good – that was a really great – or even if I make a good joke, like, probably got it from my wife. So she's the nobody that, like, man, she's helped mold me into the man I am and the wise advice that I may give or say. Yeah. A lot comes from her.
Man, that's awesome.
This guy that we interviewed a while back, his name is Mo, Pastor Mo, and he said, the voice of the Holy Spirit sounds a lot like my wife.
It's true for me.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I love that.
There's no doubt. Anytime I've met, like, a man that I respect a lot, or I think that is, like, incredibly smart, full of wisdom, or well-spoken, like, there's always a killer wife behind him. Like, she's just an absolute, like, prayer warrior, amazing woman of God. And just like, yep, makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, I have a lot of – this is – we normally don't follow up this question, but I just really want to, and then we'll be out. Done. Go play basketball with the Brozens. So, I mean, I know a lot of people who right now are trying to find the person to spend the rest of their lives with.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's we are involved with a lot of college students here at Lee University, right? I think they play Tribeca probably in basketball or something like that. But is there one or two things that you would encourage somebody that's like looking for that person, that nobody that they can spend the rest of their life with?
Yeah.
What sort of guidance would you give somebody?
Yeah, my first response is be that person. Be that man or that woman that somebody's looking for. Like, if you are walking in your identity with Christ and you are being who God has called you to be, like, I am such a believer in that the Lord will send that person, or you will find that person, but be that person first. There's so many people I know. I feel like, we're like, especially as I was younger, kind of growing up, that would so badly were looking for that person, and they were just seeking and looking. And I'm like, instead of looking for that person, be that person. Be the man of God that woman is looking for, and I think you'll find him. Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah,
yeah, too. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Adam, man, thank you so much. We'll let you go hoop it up with the brosens. But as we always say here at Cup of Nobody's podcast, you don't ever have to try to be somebody with us.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Had a good time. For sure.